The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the second hour of this Friday show. I hope you're all very well today. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for texting in and calling in and some of your comments now here. A member of your panel referred to the IAPT service in the UK. Just to clarify, those services are not for children. They provide a service for those aged 16 and over. A caller says, what about the shocking amount of drunk drivers in Ireland, especially in certain rural areas of Donegal? If we continue to turn a blind eye to the blind drunk on our roads, the carnage will continue. It seems in this country, private profit trumps public health and safety. And drunk driving, obviously, also a significant issue here. Greg, cutting speed limits may help a little, but I think some people's mentality needs to change too. I witnessed two young male drivers jump into their cars yesterday evening and started to race each other on a long stretch of road. But what horrified me more was that one young fella had a wee boy of about 5 or 6 in the front seat of the car, no seatbelt. How do you deal with these sort of drivers? Speed restrictions will not work without enforcement, and I mean proper enforcement, says this listener. No exclusions, no two-tier systems, no preferential treatment for certain groups as in the past in Ireland, i.e. the three Ps. Only then will the public take this seriously. Good morning, Greg. Big push about speed limits, yet suicide rates are 3 times higher than road deaths, and how much is spent on mental health? The RSA was set up to cut road deaths. They obviously didn't do their job. Let's all go slower and pollute the air. More net zero only when it suits. The last few tragedies, 3 or 4, were weather-related and surface-related, and on a tragic collision in an estate, it wasn't speed. Just to let you know, we take the issue of mental health and suicide very seriously here. We're going to be talking about that a little later on. And in terms of dealing with the awful situation of suicide, the coroners, and we've covered this a couple of times on the show, are working to a system whereby we actually know the full extent of the situation. And I think when we know that, and it might be even quite more stark than the figures that you quoted there, hopefully then something can be done to address that awful situation. Greg, read the road deaths. We need to stop covering up non-fatal collisions every other weekend on our roads. How is that teaching the young drivers a lesson when their weekend antics are cleared up by mummy and daddy and the driver's not penalised or banned from driving? Too much of that going on, truth be told. Why can't cars be restricted on a 100-kilometre speed limit? There's no need for anyone to be travelling any faster. I'm not sure about the speed limiter. I'm just thinking of a scenario whereby, say, you have a lorry that's limited to 80, and someone goes to overtake that lorry and something happens and they don't have that extra speed. I don't know. That's one scenario where I wonder. And also, it probably wouldn't be very hard to circumnavigate it either. Greg, I think the new speed limits need to be converted into miles, as not everyone has kilometres on their cars. How are we meant to know what speed to drive? Well, you can perhaps work it out. All new cars, are either in kilometres or can be switched to kilometres. Older cars, imports perhaps may have the miles per hour on them. But as I say, you know, 50s, 30 and so on and so forth, I think a mile's 5/8 of a kilometre or vice versa. Hi, Greg. A quarter of all road deaths are people not wearing seatbelts. Why is speed the only area the government are looking at? Answer, they believe more money from speed cameras catching fish in a bowl. But the money from speed cameras is not great. Like, it's not like the GoSafe are profitable. They're contracted by the Gardaí. But it's not like it's a massive money-making enterprise. I have no doubt that Gardaí are interested in not money, because you'll know the issues the guards have, but actually in reducing deaths on the roads. And I would listen to them as well too. And I would say my opinion would be formed more particularly by speaking to those that have to visit these scenes, that do the investigations, that have to inform families. I mean, that's a voice I'd be really interested in hearing in this whole conversation. Excellent talk on the current farming issues, Greg. Thanks very much. We do like to cover the important stuff as well, primarily, obviously. We need now to start supporting our local family farms, which can grow our fruits and veg in our closest villages, rather than getting them shipped in from Argentina. Get our milk from our neighbours rather than the big shops. We should rather eat healthier than processed junk. We must realise that our government has sold us out and we need to take matters into our own hands and shop locally and healthily. Another, this could be a great opportunity for farmers now to get into more organic or regenerative farming. There are more natural ways, products to put on your land that encourages growth, and there are good schemes from government that are designed to do that too, be it forestry or something else. Totally agree with this lady talking. Sadly, the farmers are finally finding out what the fishermen did for years. We need to stand with our farmers now. Everyone needs to pressure the government to support them rather than dictate or have it dictated from Europe. Farmers need to get back to basics, says another, and use plain manure. The second they went to slurry, I knew there was trouble ahead. Our agriculture minister should go back to Europe, give an ultimatum and mean it. We exit the EU and sail alongside Britain. There's no reason why Ireland cannot get on without doing, get on with doing what we do best, producing safe food. But where do we export that food to? And this is where the British have come unstuck here. They thought they could do it on their own, that they'd be better on their own. But I'll tell you, Britain is in a poor state, and it's no example to sort of threaten and say we'll do what they did. You know, we are exporters, but we have to consider where we would export the food. There's no money in growing enough, raring enough food, producing enough milk just for an internal market. It would sustain us, but that would not be beneficial to the general economy. Okay, we are joined on the programme now by Angeline Diver, who is director of Ohana Zero Suicide. Good morning to you, Angeline. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping today?
I'm very well. Okay. Yes, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about Ohana Zero Suicide.
Well, Ohana Zero Suicide was launched in December 2020. And up to now, over 1,100,000 people have logged onto the website to do the Ohana Suicide Prevention Training. And on Tuesday, we launched the specific training for third level students in the Mansion House with the Lord Mayor Dáithí de Roiste. So we're very, very proud of that. It was attended by Anna MacDonald from the National Office of Suicide Prevention. It was attended by Trinity College, the IRFU, a lot of people that are really interested in our third level students. And I suppose these students specifically have been through the trauma of COVID and have spent quite a bit of time at home. So it can be quite an isolating experience now to go away to college, Greg. So this training is free, 30 minutes, and it gives you the tools to really identify the signs if somebody is struggling.
Now, this is the third level edition. Is this targeted specifically to third level students? Because there are obviously other versions of this program available, but this is specifically, and I'm thinking of listening to granny and granddads and mums and dads listening, this is specifically for their third level students, and there can be signposts to that by, as I say, those listening in case their students aren't.
It's for the third level students, but it's also for their families, their parents, their friends.
So when when your student comes back from college, for an example, if you go through this, it educates you on perhaps how to identify the signs of a struggle, or open up a conversation, or to understand language, or to use the right language, because we can feel very... Sometimes I think we go into our own shell because we don't know what the right thing to say is, or we don't want to make things worse. So this tools people in a very simple, informative way as to how best identify and deal with any issues.
Exactly, yes. And it's like really using the specific language. You know, for example, if they feel that somebody is really struggling or depressed, to have the courage to say, "Are you feeling suicidal?" And in the past, you know, a lot of people would have thought, well, if I mention the word suicide, that might plant a seed and that might, you know, really devastate the person altogether or push them over the edge, whereas evidence has really shown that that is not the case. And by using that language, you can actually save somebody's life.
And what's the logic there? Does it fling the door open to conversation rather than maybe two parties pussyfooting around it and not actually getting to the core of the issue?
Yeah, exactly. It's like sometimes you find that people will say, "Oh, you'll be okay. What have you to worry about? You know, you have everything that you need. You have everything going for you." But when you actually sit down, and it's specifically, and it's not just for men, but sometimes women find it easier to talk to each other. Whereas men will say, you know, listen, we'll go for a pint, or are you going to the match? But it's like really having that conversation. Are you okay? And they probably will say the first time, yes, I'm grand. And then they'll say, well, you are away at college. You know, how are you finding it? It's like getting deeper into that conversation. And then you will find that people will, this person is actually really listening, or he's actually really interested. And then you may find that they will open up and actually talk about how they are feeling. And that's what we want to encourage, because in that simple book, you know, Charlie McKenzie, he said, what is the bravest thing you've ever said? The boy asked, and the horse said, help. Mm. You know, it's like really just asking that question. I need a bit of help. I need to talk, or is there something, advice you can give me?
And you are equipped with that advice. Now, you're not expected to become a counsellor as such. You're also informed as to, from that point, because the conversation has been established, the situation has been established, and you can offer some words of comfort or encouragement. But then you are also given the details as to how you direct that person to help that's most appropriate to them. And as I say, a lot of this perhaps is common sense, and people might go, oh, I knew that anyway. But there's so many of us don't know how to deal with a situation like this.
Exactly. And you know what we've really found is the most traumatic thing is when you hear people say, why did I not see it? You know, and that's what they're left with. They're left with the questions and the guilt and wondering, you know, forever and ever, you know, is there something I could have done that would have made that difference? So with this short
and
training...
And often, can I just say, just often in that situation, there isn't anyone could have done. Just in case that person is listening, just because you did this, it doesn't mean that you could have prevented something happening. But by going through a program like this, you best give yourself the opportunity to spot signs.
Exactly, yeah. And you will find in some of the speakers that are on the training that they will say, if I had known that, things might have been different. But that's all they can say. Things may have been different. They may not have been. And we're not trying to send anybody on a guilt trip. It's really like, you know, it's like prevention is better, as we all say, prevention is better. So if you can learn something new that may help save a life, why not? You know, why not get those tools? We're always trying to educate ourselves and, you know, really become more empowered in all walks of life. And this is just another way.
Yeah, and this to some extent, and I welcome it, goes against of what you might sort of come across on social media, where, and I think it's almost creating a space whereby the general population don't want to talk about things because you'll see trigger warnings at the start of tweets and stuff, right? So we, or X's or whatever they're called now. So you get conditioned to that over a while and you think, right, the best thing is to, unless I am an expert or unless it's me affected, it's best for me to not say anything because I could get jumped on for triggering something. This normalizes the language and makes it very clear that it's not an opinion. It's based on research that we have to use certain words and we have to be quite frank in our questioning because that's how the other party feels that, right, now I can open up. Right, this is a space where I'll be listened to.
Yes, and you know what we always talk about is the stigma that's attached to suicide. So breaking down that stigma, and the easiest way to break down any stigma is to communicate, to talk about it. And then it does become more normal and it does become more acceptable to talk about, to have these conversations and to have them openly. And it's like really, you know, when two or three people are together, you know, instead of chatting and talking about the fun and the crack and everything, you know, to sit down and just have, listen, everybody, how are we all doing? You know, let's have a conversation. And if somebody wants to share something, and this can be in a very, you know, a private, intimate conversation with people that you trust, obviously, you're not going to be talking openly about your feelings to people that you don't really know that well. But it's like really talking about it or even talking about what would happen if one of us did feel like this. So that we're always prepared, you know, and that stigma is broken down just by having these conversations regularly. And then it's not a huge thing for somebody to actually open up and say, listen, I'm not feeling 100%. Or if you notice somebody is not being their normal self, that you can say to them, I've noticed, you know, that there's something just not right. You're not your usual self. And that simply can open up that conversation. Is there something going on? Are you feeling okay? Is there anything I can do? And then if you feel it's appropriate, I mean, you're not going to be asking everybody, are you suicidal? But if you feel those words are appropriate, just to say them. Mm-hmm. And that then, and I have heard people say this, and I'm so proud now, Greg, of, you know, even hearing somebody say, listen, are you suicidal? Are you feeling, you know, is that how you're feeling? Because the more we say that and the more we normalize that, well, then, again, it's mm-hmm. part of the prevention that we feel is necessary.
And part of this, going through this process, is to give you indicators as to when that statement or that question is actually appropriate, because there are circumstances then, and you have to go through it and you'll understand. OHANA.ie. All you're being asked for is to give 20 to 30 minutes of your time and learn about something that you might think you may not need, but you just don't know, because there are taxi drivers, other service providers that have done this in the past for different reasons and then found themselves in a conversation with someone in the back of the cab or what have you, and been able to utilise the tools and save lives, because sometimes it's the stranger that you happen to bump into. And if a conversation takes a certain path, again, this provides you with the tools and the language to help someone. That's what we want to do, is to help other people.
And it gives you that confidence that you know what to say and you don't feel embarrassed by saying it. You can say it, you know, say it really strongly and confidently, which gives them the confidence then to open up and talk about it, because they feel that they know this person actually knows how I'm feeling by the words that they're using.
We are speaking, of course, ahead of, I want to use the correct terminology here, World Suicide Prevention Day. What is the theme of it? I had it in front of me, but I can't seem to find it now. The theme is actually creating hope through action. And that kind of fits in really quite nicely with the Ohana Zero Suicide Programme.
It does, yeah. And actually, the Lord Mayor Dahi, his plan for his year is be kind, you know, to make Dublin a city of kindness. So that, again, you know, can get... It can be attached to that, you know, be kind, just look out for people, look out for your family, look in the mirror. Sometimes it's like suicide does not discriminate. It is everybody's business. It could be somebody really close to you, or it could be somebody sitting beside you on the bus, or somebody that's sitting on a chair beside, you know, a river or a nice walk. And you just notice something and you sit down and you say, is everything okay? And, you know, sometimes it's easier to talk to a stranger. Mm. So it's really like, you know, just being open and being confident to say those words, you know, is everything okay? You know, just ask the question and make the call. You know, we have all the resources there. And one thing, Greg, is if you do plan to ask that question to somebody, be prepared for the answer. So you can't ask the question and then leave the person there and say, well, listen, I'll be back to you in a few days, or I have to go to work now. You have to make sure that you are able to sit down and spend time with them and make sure that you do the right thing and make sure that they are looked after.
Okay, so it's for students, lecturers, I suppose, parents, aunties, uncles, grandparents, whoever might be closest to it. We know going to third level is a difficult time for some, and this is about identifying maybe even issues early. You know, it's just to be kind to each other, to help each other. You're asked just to commit 30 minutes of your time, which flies on TikTok or Facebook or something. But your 30 minutes, up to 30 minutes, at ohana.ie, OHANA.ie. And if you do it, text us and let us know of your experience, and we can give you a shout out for doing so as well, if that helps.
Mentioned there, Greg, there is a certificate at the end of it that you can print off, or you can, you know, take a
put on your socials to let people, you know.
And even if they want to share that on their social media platforms, it would be great to see. We're just calling it a little bit of a train-a-thon before World Suicide Prevention Day. So as many people as possible, even if you just take on, because sometimes you say, oh, I must do that, and then life gets in the way and, you know, you don't do it. But if you could just take on to get it done before Sunday the 10th, of September, World Suicide Prevention Day. That's just a little thing to do to make a difference in the world and to make a difference here in Ireland and in Donegal and everywhere, all over.
Yeah, and I think when we last talked about this, there was a wee rush of activity in the Northwest as people actually did take it on, if I recall correctly. So hopefully we see the same again. It's just 30 minutes of your time, or up to 30 minutes of your time. Ohana.ie, O-H-A-N-A.ie. And it's helping yourself because it gives you confidence and power maybe to help someone else. And who's to say when you might need that. But also, even just for mums and dads, it's difficult sometimes to communicate with our younger people, and some of it's one thing and then some of it could be another. Okay, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Is there something you wish to add, or are you happy enough, Angeline?
Just the Samaritan's number, Greg, is 116-123, but... and Pieta House is 1800-247-247.
Just recap those, because it dropped out a little bit. Just recap those numbers first, please.
Okay, the Samaritan's is 116-123, and they're available 24-7. Pieta is 1800-247-247, and they're absolutely fantastic as well. Show you care, ask the question, make the call for help.
Have a lovely day. Angeline Diver there, director of Ohana Zero Suicide. It's ohana.ie, O-H-A-N-A.ie. If you want to take part in that, it's short, 20 to 30 minutes, third level edition of suicide training. I think I did it in about 20 or maybe slightly less. It's not a big commitment, but then you kind of know stuff. You know, you know stuff. It empowers you. And empowers you maybe to be able to help others closest to you, or even someone that you just happen to talk to. As I say, let us know how you get on with that by texting the show, and even over the weekend we'll pick them up. A caller says on the issue we had before the break there, this can be so hard to hear for people. Is this appropriate to air? What about the families who have lost someone? I've often on this programme... Obviously, everyone deals with things in a different way. And of course, I'm acutely aware that some, and I hope I recognise that in the conversation, that some will find it difficult to listen to. But not talking about it has not served us very well at all. And there's never a right time to not to talk about it either. But most of the conversations I have about mental health or suicide are with people who've been affected by it, and they don't want other people to be affected by it either. And I don't think it's not like collateral damage where it's okay to hurt some people so that you can still talk about it to help others. It's not like that at all. It's a difficult one, but as I say, we have to talk about it. It's a serious problem, and not talking about it hasn't really served us very well at all. But I respect your view. I understand your view, and I be conscious of that in having those conversations. I genuinely do. And the same as it relates to road safety as well. There are people that it will inevitably hurt, but you just try as best as possible to be conscious of that and to choose your language carefully, and for maybe them to come along on board with you, and to understand that what you're trying to do is to make sure someone another family is not going through what they're going through, the nightmare that they're going through. But as I say, I appreciate your comment, and it's something I am aware of. I have a child that just started school and is getting a bus to school, and I realise that the bus driver is not advising them to put the seatbelts on, or helping them for that matter. I'm paying for this private bus service and I can't guarantee the safety of my 5-year-old child. We talk about speed and adults, but let's think of the children here. What do I do about this? Do I approach the bus driver or the company? 100%. You paying for it, you say, listen, my young boy or girl is on the bus and they might need a little bit of help with the seatbelt, or they're not being advised to put the seatbelts on, or the driver's pulling off without the children putting their seatbelts on. Obviously, to some extent, the driver can only do so much, but certainly if you've got concerns, raise it with the bus driver in the first instance, rather than going above their head into the company and then it going back down the way. I think I'd politely mention it to the bus driver first. Okay, Louise joins us on the programme now. Hi, Louise, how are you getting on?
Hi, Greg, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're in a dilemma that's going to be very familiar to an awful lot of people listening. Your daughter heading off to college, it's a big step for her in Sligo, so got her place, all very, very exciting. But now we're down to the situation of where is she going to live? So that happiness and joy and nervousness is all exacerbated by this issue.
Yeah, it certainly has overshadowed after getting the acceptance and, you know, that joy, that excitement. And maybe originally I thought I was maybe being a little bit naive, and I thought that accommodation would be easily to come by, especially being a first-year student. However, since looking on like social media and joining all the different groups and the ATU Sligo Union group, there are hundreds, Greg, hundreds of young people from Donegal desperately seeking accommodation. They've accepted their places because obviously Tegan got her first place, so it was something that she wanted to do. And now I just feel a complete loss. I'm spending all day, every day on the phone. I've even tried hostels, I've tried Airbnbs, I've tried hotels. And yeah, I'm just a little bit of a loss as to where I'm going to put my daughter on the 18th of September when she starts her college degree.
And if you find anything, is it any way affordable? Or if you, you know, what kind of prices are we talking so, if you do happen to come across something that is available?
Yeah, so honestly, they really vary. So we've had some, my daughter could have gone into this accommodation had I been able to afford it. And it was a shared bedroom, so she will be sharing with someone else, shared bathroom, kitchen and living quarters. It was £800 deposit, wow. €800 deposit. Then they needed a heat and lighting deposit for the bills. And then it was €100 a week and then your other bills on top. So unfortunately, that was a little bit out of our price range. I've messaged some people today. You're looking on average between €100 and €200 a month for a room. Some of them are en suite, some of them are shared bathrooms. But they're so, like, you've got so many people. You've got like 400 or 500 students desperate for accommodation that as soon as one person becomes available on these sites, like, obviously everyone's jumping on them. And because she doesn't drive, I'm kind of enclosed to a niche as to where I can send her, because it has to have a bus route or some kind of transportation from where she's staying to get her into Sligo.
Understood. Because all of a sudden, if it's outside Sligo or it's a taxi ride or and too long to walk and God knows what the weather might be like, that 100, 130 a week all of a sudden becomes 220 if you start putting taxis and stuff on it. And you don't want to send her down there where she's completely reliant on the help of others, you know, even in terms of shared lifts and stuff. It's a lot of money, isn't it, Louise? And we want our best for our children, of course, and for them to achieve their best. But, and you know, that probably is on the lower side of it when you look at what someone might play in Galway or Dublin, but it's still big money.
Yeah, I think it comes down to affordability, and what's affordable for one person may not be affordable for somebody else, and what's reasonable for one person might be out of the other person's budget. Now, I was looking into buses also, Greg, so because we live in Stranorla, so I was looking into buses to see, you know, is it possible to bus it? I know it's an hour and a half bus, but if this is the course that you want to take and this is the, you know, the outcome that you want for your life, you're gonna put yourself out there for it. I've contacted all the bus companies that come through Ballybuffet, and she can get to Sligo, but should she have a 9 a.m. lecture, she's going to be late for that lecture because the earliest bus is 8 o'clock.
Yeah, and I presume it's not practical for a local bus operator to put on a bus, even if it was full. It could be cost prohibitive to the students compared to what they would need to make it pay. So what are your options, Louise? I mean, the chances of finding something in the last 2 weeks, I mean, you know, it's like doing the lotto to some extent. You would hope and pray. Maybe there's someone listening actually from Donegal that has a room and would love to split it, you know what I mean, if it were appropriate. But that's the kind of space we're in now. Is someone going up and down where car share and contribution to fuel can be a factor to it? Or is there someone down there from up here that would like someone, you know, that would be obviously, again, if it was appropriate and agreeable to both parties to share? I don't know. Is that the options you're looking at now, Louise?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm looking at. So I've posted on all of my social media that I'm happy to, you know, carpool if there is anybody travelling, even if you're just travelling to Sligo for work, and she can get to Sligo. I mean, we just need to get her there. So if it was a carpooling thing and she didn't have a lecture or something till maybe 1 o'clock, there's always facilities available on campus. So there's a library. There's different things she can be getting on with when she's actually in Sligo. So, yeah, I've been looking at carpooling. I'm still interested in any kind of digs if there's, you know, a room available. And I am very cautious as well, Greg, because she is 17. So you want the best for your children, don't you? You want to put them in an environment where they're going to be safe and where, you know, they're going to thrive.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
And
I'm hoping that
is
out of the woodwork.
Take the year out, is taking the year out on the table? Neither of the two you want that, I presume.
So taking the year out would have been an option. However, you had to you had a small window to confirm you wanted to take a year out.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time when we accepted the
course. Yeah.
Yeah, she'd actually found some digs, and we were like, oh, that's fabulous. And then, unfortunately, the digs have fallen through because there's a change in the buses, so that bus doesn't no longer go down that way. So when she actually took her course, she thought she'd sorted it. We thought we had digs for her.
It's got. There's a lot of people listening to you, Louise, that are going to say that's our situation. That's our situation as well. And it's really, really tough. And I think it's underestimated how tough it is on parents and guardians and caregivers, because as you say, you just want the best and you want to give them every opportunity and you want to find the solution. But we're at the point now whereas hopefully a call like this may help. But you try and, you know, calling every day. I'm sure it's dominating your day, checking the social media, checking the inboxes. It's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, it is quite full on. And every time your phone pings, you're like jumping, hoping that it's somebody offering you a room or something that's going to be acceptable for her. And I feel like she's done everything that I wanted her to do. So she's done a leaving cert. She passed everything. She got accepted in the college that she wanted, in the course that she wanted. So then I feel like a little bit responsible now to set this up for her so that she can continue on and do what she planned to do. But as I say, you just hit brick walls. There was hardly any. I know there was two student-built accommodation blocks that actually closed in June and informed students that they would no longer be running a student accommodation. So that was 400 students that got informed that those buildings were changing use.
Straight to the back of the queue.
And I know
there,
that.
Yeah, that's a nightmare for them as well.
Yeah. And then I know it's just been passed by the Minister of Higher Education, Simon Harris. They've said no, it can only be used for student accommodation.
Okay.
So all those people are now waiting to see whether they can get in there. And obviously I'm waiting to see, is there any breadcrumbs?
Mm.
Is there anything spare going?
And Louise, do you know how to search the rent a room thing? I'm hearing the adverts where people are able to rent out a room to a student and it doesn't affect their benefits or what have you if that applies to them. Have you looked at that? I don't even know how you access it because I don't have anyone looking for accommodation, if you know what I mean. But is there a search engine for that?
Yeah, so draft.ie, they do gigs as well. The
right.
ATU Student Union are putting up every single option they
Understood.
Get. There's two groups on Facebook that are for Sligo accommodation, and I've joined those groups, and they're just chock-a-block of people literally begging mm-hmm. for accommodation. You know, I'm tidy, I'm clean, I'm well behaved, I won't be in. But like, you see these young people, they're literally begging for somebody to take them in and be like, yeah, okay, I can give you a room.
Caller says, accommodation or lack of is shocking. My daughter was accepted into Maynooth but has had to defer until next year as accommodation was not available. And the student accommodation queuing system online last Friday morning was shambolic and definitely not a queue as described by the college. I have anxiety now just thinking of not getting accommodation again next year. And the problem is, it's very difficult to set this up in advance because you get notification of what course you have or whether you're accepted very late, and then this scrambles all jammed into what feels like a really short couple of weeks, Louise. It's a silly system, isn't it?
Yeah, and I followed. So the ATU give you advice on those. I think there's four steps on what to do, and you apply, and then you get your offer, and then you find you accept it, and then you get accommodation. You find accommodation. So I followed their advice to the T. It's just that so many people are also scrambling for that available accommodation as well, and there's just not enough accommodation to help all these students. And, I mean, I'm going to be probably one of the lucky ones if I can get a bus, you know, if we can get an arrangement with the university. She can get the bus from here, but someone from Dublin or someone from Kerry or further away, they're really going to struggle. Mm. Then not only are they completely moving to a new environment where they probably don't know anyone and it's a whole new agenda for them, they've also got a struggle with trying to find somewhere to live.
Yeah, okay. Louise, you're in the Ballybofey area. I think you mentioned it. I don't know, but I heard that's what you said. So maybe there's someone listening in that area that has a student that's also looking for accommodation or has found it and might want to have a chat with you and see if it all suits everybody. Or maybe they're going up and down to Sligo from that area. Again, you know, you're pretty flexible in making that work as well. We have your details here. It's probably a long shot, but look, I think, Louise, what you've done is give a voice to an awful lot of people in the exact same position as well. So thank you for that. But I hope something positive for you and your daughter comes from it as well.
Thank you so much, Greg, and thank you for your time.
Take care, Louise. Okay, our next guest is Aoife Moore, political journalist and author. Her new book, The Long Game, Inside Sinn Féin at Now. Good morning, Aoife. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back on the show. So what's the subject matter behind, I suppose, the title of your new book, Aoife?
Yeah, it's not a history book, but it is an explanation of where Sinn Féin came from. So the Sinn Féin we know now in its current form was born out of the hunger strike in 1981. And it's basically a timeline and a series of stories about how they became the most popular party on the island, north and south, up until present day.
And how long have you been working on this, and how did you gather the information, Aoife?
It feels like a lifetime. So I signed the contract when I was just the day before my 30th birthday and on my 32. So about 2 years altogether, but it was, I can't exactly call it a labour of love because it was a nightmare, but I endeavoured to speak to as many people, MPs, MLAs, TDs, staff, current and former of the party, to try and get an inside look about how the party operates, how the party were thinking at big points in Irish history and the peace process, and obviously former volunteers of the IRA, the security services, the British state. So it took a long time. I think I went to every corner of the island. I travelled to London. And this is the final product now. So I hope that it gives a real insight into how Sinn Féin operate and how they've become, you know, as I said, likely candidates for the next government, and not only in Stormont, but in the Republic as well.
And how's it been received by Sinn Féin?
I hear they're not happy, but you need to remember that Sinn Féin really didn't want me to write this book. The best way I could describe it was the Sinn Féin were unhelpful at best and obstructive at worst. I was sent an email by their solicitor telling me not to contact press office anymore, that I was only to contact a solicitor. I was given the runaround by Sinn Féin for over a year when I was trying to get interviews, so I got no official cooperation from the party. And so far I hear that they're not altogether too happy about it. But I suppose that's to be expected with Sinn Féin and kind of how they react to negative press and negative stories anyway.
Was it difficult to convince former, those with knowledge, former or even current non-elected Sinn Féin members to cooperate?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's a real, real high level of discipline within Sinn Féin. So the interviews were carried out under the condition that I offered people anonymity. You need to remember that a lot of the people, maybe they aren't in Sinn Féin officially anymore, but they are members. They're from Republican communities. They still have a lot of loved ones who vote Sinn Féin or aren't and in Sinn Féin. So there was a lot of convincing. I found women a lot harder to convince to speak than men. I don't want to make the obvious joke about men liking the sound of their own voice, but There was. I made a real effort to speak as many women as men, because I think in books about the Troubles and because about politics, it is very much dominated by male voices. And I really wanted to change that. But I find women actually a lot harder, because for a lot of people, there's a lot of trauma as well. It's a different time in their life and they want to move on. But I am eternally grateful to the people who did speak. And a lot of current representatives and current members of Sinn Féin did speak to me. They just didn't tell the party that they spoke to me.
Now, you know, look, you're an author. You put your stuff out there. People are going to review it, critique it, and that's fine. That's all part of it. But I think you are one of maybe a small group of people on this island that also... People seem, you're a lightning rod for a commentary, you know, when a lot of people are seem to be like you haven't seen before, your personality or your work and sort of framing reviews in relation to that or commentary in relation to that, that's something you probably just have to put up with, Aoife, is it? Do you recognise what I'm talking about?
I absolutely know what you're talking about, but listen... If people review the book and they don't like the book, that's absolutely fine. I mean, that's part and parcel of putting your work out there. I think when you see some of the commentary around that we've seen in the last day or so, it is very much, it's more about me than it is about the book. And I think that says a lot about people. Listen, I think the way I look, the age I am, the fact that I'm from Derry and a big advocate for Derry and the North really rubs people up the wrong way in the Republic. I don't count Donegal on that, but in some areas of the Republic, you know that there is a very partitionist attitude. They do not want me working down there, commenting on politics. I have had death threats, rape threats. So this is all, you know, it was all very much expected, even though it is disappointing. And what is most disappointing, it's from people who are old enough to know better.
Yeah, I think people in the establishment need to understand that sometimes they can be cheerleaders for anons who want to abuse others as well. Okay, the book, I'm sure, is available in all the usual places, Aoife.
Yes, all good bookshops, all little ones and big ones, and Amazon, but I would prefer everyone's shop is a local bookshop if that's possible.
No problem. Aoife Moore, listen, good luck with it. Thank you very much indeed. Political journalist, her new book, The Long Game, Inside Sinn Féin, out now.